This is a reading of the collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Approaching the Mystery of Golgotha. Lecture 7 is entitled The Christ Impulse Across the Ages and Its Power in the Human Being, given in Pforzheim, March 7, 1914. In our time, it becomes increasingly important for souls whose karma has led them to spiritual science to receive a deep impression of the meaning of the mystery of Golgotha. Friends who were present at our most recent branch meetings have already heard much about the fact that the mystery of Golgotha has a prehistory. It is, as it were, the conclusion of a series of events. These dear friends have also heard that in the earth's development, the Christ being united with the body of Jesus of Nazareth. Through this union, a being walked on fields of earth through whom the presence of the cosmic Christ being was revealed within earthly existence. It is important for the whole future development of humanity that human beings today acquire an increasing understanding of the mystery of Golgotha. From this understanding, reverence and deeply heartfelt devotion must flow toward what occurred through the mystery of Golgotha for the development of humanity. As we have said repeatedly, we know that in the preparation for the mystery of Golgotha, two Jesus infants were born. One was the Jesus with the Zoroaster capital I. The other, from the Nathan line of the house of David, was a most special being. We know that when the Nathan Jesus was 12, the Zoroaster I moved over into him from the other boy, the Solomon Jesus. Between his 12th and 30th years, this Nathan Jesus, bearing the Zoroaster I, prepared to undergo the event shown in the baptism in the Jordan, the reception of the Christ being. The Christ being interpenetrated this Jesus of Nazareth, and at death poured itself out into the spiritual sphere of the earth. As a result, humanity can participate more and more in the spiritual powers proceeding from the mystery of Golgotha, powers that can flow through all souls and hearts. I have already said that before Golgotha, in a certain way as preparation, the mystery of Golgotha took place three times for the salvation of humanity, once in the ancient Lemurian age, then in the Atlantean age, and then, once again, toward the end of the Atlantean age. Finally, at the beginning of our time, as we reckon it in the post-Atlantean period, it took place for the fourth time in the way we know it. Only what we call the mystery of Golgotha took place on the physical plane. The other events, which were preparatory ones, took place entirely in the spiritual world. But what happened then, the forces that formed, flowed down into earthly souls and bodies for the salvation of humanity. In all the events that prepared the mystery of Golgotha, the same being, which was born later as the Nathan Jesus, was suffused with the Christ being. The essential aspect of the mystery of Golgotha is that this Jesus being who grew up as the Nathan boy was permeated by the Christ being. The being, who later became the Nathan Jesus, was also present at the three earlier events, only then he was not incarnated as a physical human being. He lived as a spiritual archangelic-like being in the spiritual worlds, and was interpenetrated by the Christ being in the preliminary stages of the mystery of Golgotha, during the Lemurian Age and twice during the Atlantean Age. Consequently, we can say that there were, so to speak, three angelic lives in the spiritual world. The being who led this angelic or archangelic life was fundamentally the same one who was born later as a human being and is described in the Gospel of Luke as the Jesus child. Three times this angelic being, who later offered himself for sacrifice as a human being, offered himself for interpenetration by the Christ impulse. Just as we have in Christ Jesus a human being suffused with the Christ impulse, we can also say that previously an angel was interpenetrated with the Christ impulse three times. And just as what happened through the mystery of Golgotha flowed out into the spiritual atmosphere of the earth, so also what occurred in the first three events flowed out of the cosmos onto the earth. If we look at the course of human evolution and see how the mystery of Golgotha stands at the midpoint of human development, we can, in fact, say that the mystery of Golgotha is such a midpoint in earthly development. Everything that happened before the mystery of Golgotha points ahead and prepares for the mystery of Golgotha. And everything that happened afterward represents the gradual progressing flow of the forces from the mystery of Golgotha into human souls and hearts. If we look more closely into which part of the human being received what flowed out from the force of the mystery of Golgotha, we can say that the force of the mystery of Golgotha flows to that part of the human being that can develop its consciousness in the physical world. Is that not so? We cannot yet speak of Jesus Christ to the child who has just been born. There is no way we can make a child understand who or what Jesus is. If we could look into the soul of a child whose eyes are resting on some image, whether an image like the Sistine Madonna or the crucifix, we would notice that we cannot approach a child at the very beginning of life with the outer pedagogical methods we use on the physical plane. But we can, starting with the time when the child begins to babble, accustom it to pronounce the name of Jesus and offer it pictures referring to Christ. However, we will not feel a deeper understanding preparing itself in the heart of a child at the very beginning of life. One thing is clear to anyone who can look into the mind of a child with the means of spiritual science. The first time one can help even the feeblest feeling for Christ to dawn through outer pedagogical methods is when the child reaches the point in its life that it can later remember, when its consciousness of its I awakens. Certainly no great understanding will be present in the first years after consciousness of the I awakens, but any kind of representation that has something of the life of the Christ impulse in its words and pictures, and that we communicate without dogma, will benefit, for the rest of his or her life, the person this child will become. After the awakening of consciousness of the I, we can indeed do some things, even when only a dim consciousness is present. For example, a child looks at the Sistine Madonna and Christ on the cross entirely differently after the awakening of consciousness of the I than before, even though we cannot yet begin to make an effect on that child through physical means. The mystery of Golgotha entered the earthly development of humanity and is destined to have its effect on the progress of spiritual life on the physical plane. And a human being actually first really sets foot onto the physical plane consciously when the I awakens. But what is there before this? Three things precede the awakening of the I and the child. I have already alluded to these in earlier lectures. They are things of enormous importance. The child learns to walk, which means it learns to raise itself up out of the position from which it was incapable of directing its bodily stance away from the earth to the heavenly heights of the universe. It learns to bring itself out of the horizontal position into the vertical position. By this, human beings primarily distinguish themselves from beasts. Through its own inner power, the child learns to assume an upright posture and to turn its gaze away from the earthly. The animal, through its entire determined nature and form, must necessarily have its gaze directed to the earthly. The exceptions to this are only seeming ones. The child learns the upright posture before consciousness of the I awakens. We actually recapitulate in our present post-Atlantean life all the things we, as human beings, have appropriated in the course of time. What we made our own only gradually during the ancient Lemurian age, learning to walk and stand upright, we now repeat in childhood before our eye consciously awakens. This learning is compressed into the time when it does not yet depend upon our consciousness. It still functions as an unconscious impulse. Animals that have an approximately vertical, approximately upward-pointing gait have their entire organism so organized that they naturally assume this position, which is, in fact, fundamentally not entirely erect. It would be a false comparison if animals that become approximately vertical were considered to be like human beings. A human being is called in the first period of life, before consciousness of the I awakens, yet through the disposition of the I, to bring itself into an upright vertical posture, to raise itself out of the position in which it existed in the ancient moon age. The direction of its backbone was then parallel to the surface of the moon. It was primarily horizontal. In the ancient Lemuria, human beings learned to transform the moon orientation into an earthly orientation. This arose because, out of their own substance, the spirits of form first instilled the I into the human being during the development of the earth. The first manifestation of this influx of the I is the inner power, through which the human being straightens up and is thereby, as it were, snatched away from the earth. The earth itself has inner spiritual forces that can flow through the backbone if it remains horizontal in its natural growth, as in the body of an animal. But the earth has no power within itself to serve the human being directly. The human being can stand upright because of the I. Later, the consciousness of the I will awaken, so that the human being can develop harmoniously in its upright vertical gait. Forces must flow in from out of the cosmos. However, because the human being was torn away from the spiritual powers of the earth, Lucifer and Ahriman would have been able to bring human development into disorder if the first Christ event had not intervened during the ancient Lemurian period. During this ancient Lemurian period, in the spiritual realm closest to our earthly realm, the Christ being interpenetrated the being that later became the Nathan Jesus, who then, however, was a kind of angelic being. That was a preliminary stage to the mystery of Golgotha. The consequence was that, during ancient Lemuria, in the etheric spiritual heights, however, the future Nathan Jesus, who otherwise would have had the form of an angel, assumed an etheric human form, naturally not a fleshly one. In the closest region above the earth, Jesus of Nazareth was to be found as an etheric angel form. Through its suffusion with the Christ being, the future Nathan Jesus then assumed etheric human form. With that, something new entered into the cosmos. This then radiated forth over the earth and made it possible for the physical form of the earthly human being, into which the power of the etheric Christ being flowed, to protect itself from the destruction that would have forced its way in, if the formative power that makes it a proper upright being had not been able to shine into, interpenetrate, and live within it. If the formative power, which is able to shine in because the first Christ event took place, had not flowed in with the physical sun forces, chaos would necessarily have come. What the human received through this has been living in the evolution of humanity since ancient Lemuria. We are looking at a developing human child in the right way, if we recognize that when the child straightens itself up from a creeping, crawling, helpless state and stands or walks for the first time, this can only happen properly and for the benefit of humankind, because in the ancient Lemurian age the first Christ event took place, and the spiritual etheric being who was the Nathan Jesus took on human etheric form through being permeated by the Christ. Truly, spiritual science exists so that we may enrich our feelings. Such feelings as can live in our souls when we see a child standing up and learning to walk certainly have a deep religious background. We should remember why a child walks, and then think how the Christ impulse is to be thanked for it. Thus we enrich our world view through spiritual science and gain a feeling that we could not otherwise have for what surrounds us. We notice at the same time, through spiritual science, the protector or guardian of a child's growth and development. We notice how the Christ force radiates all around the being and growth of the child. In my presentation from the Akashic Chronicle for the Lemurian period, which discusses our Lemurian ancestors, you will see that these ancestors were mute. The Atlantean human first really learned to speak. How this happened is explained in those essays on the Akashic Chronicle. Learning to speak is the second of the abilities the child appropriates before true consciousness of the I awakens. The awakening of the consciousness of the I follows learning to speak. Learning to speak rests entirely on a sort of imitation, whose foundations lie deep in human nature. Speaking is a second human ability that entered earthly humanity through its evolutionary course of development. Because the spirits of form poured through human beings, interpenetrating them, we are able to speak a language and to live our earthly lives on the physical plane. Thus, through a second element, language, we tear ourselves away from the earth, from the spiritual forces that are active within the earth. Animals are suffused with these spiritual forces of the earth and do not really learn to speak. Even speaking with gestures of the animal is not the same as human speech. If through training or some other means we were to make a speech possible for the animal that was similar to human beings, conditions would arise outside its body that would have to be discussed by spiritual science, but are outside our topic today. We want to stay with the normal development of the human being. The disposition for human speech was given through what the spirits of form poured in from divine heights. Let us stop here and observe how human beings transformed themselves from muteness into speaking beings. They freed themselves from the forces that wash through the earth spiritually, just as they freed themselves from the first stream by standing upright. Through the influence of Lucifer and Ahriman, everything connected with speech would have become base if human beings had been left entirely to the ministrations of earth, if cosmic spiritual influences that came down to earth had not poured themselves into the human being. Without these cosmic influences, humanity would not have properly developed its entire life culture. All its physical organs, the larynx, tongue, throat, and so forth, and indeed even the deeper lying organs like the heart, and so on, insofar as they relate to speech. If nothing had happened through Christ, during the Atlantean period, human beings would have developed their organs in such a way that they would have been capable of expressing themselves only in a meager babble, like a sibyl or a medium, about what causes them egotistical pain, joy, desire, or passion. Human beings would be able to produce far more artistic sounds than an animal, but their sounds would have been expressions only for what lives inside them. They would have living interjections or feeling words to express physical processes taking place in the organism. The whole of language would consist only of interjections. While now we keep the number of interjections in our languages to a minimum, without the intervention of Christ, the human art of speaking in its full complexity would have developed only to the point of interjections. This was averted in human evolution. The second Christ event averted the disorder in the power of speech that meant one could express only what was interior. This happened through the fact that in the etheric heights, the being who later became the Nathan Jesus was imbued a second time with the Christ being and assumed an essence that so penetrated human physical organs that from then on human beings became capable of uttering something other than interjections. The second Christ event made human beings capable of grasping what is objective. Yet language, the power of speech, the human ability to express the movements of the soul in words, was still in danger. Through the second Christ event, it could well have happened that human beings would not only have found sounds, interjections or feeling words for what lay within them, but also in a certain way, could have loosened the inner movement of speech. However, indicating external things through words so that words can be correct signs for external things still remained endangered by Luciferic and Ahrimanic influences well into the Atlantean period. Then came the third Christ event. For the third time, the being in the spiritual heights, who was later born as the Nathan Jesus, united with the Christ being, and once again poured itself, with the forces it assumed at that time, into the human capability of speech. The power of this Christ Jesus being now penetrated for a second time the organs in the human body having to do with the power of speech. This penetration gave the power of speech the possibility to craft words that are real signs for external surroundings, and thereby crafted language as a means of communication throughout the individual regions of humanity. The child could never learn to speak if these two Christ events had not occurred in the Atlantean age. Once again, we enrich our feeling through spiritual science if, when the child begins to speak and perfects its speaking, we then think about how the Christ impulses rule within the unconscious, and how the power of Christ lives in the power of speech as protector and helper. After the three Christ events, which I have discussed again today from a certain point of view regarding their influence on human development, there came the post-Atlantean period. In post-Atlantean development, first the peoples of the Egypto-Chaldean culture have the task of repeating what happened for humanity during ancient Lemuria, but penetrating it with consciousness. Utterly unconsciously, human beings learned to be upright beings in the Lemurian age, and to be speaking beings in the Atlantean age. Human beings had received the Christ impulse into themselves quite unconsciously, because their power of thinking had not yet been awakened. In the post-Atlantean age, they were to be led slowly to understand what they had received unconsciously in ancient times. It was the Christ impulse that allowed human beings to stand upright and to look upward to the cosmic heights. Human beings at first experienced this Christ impulse unconsciously, as it was experienced in the Lemurian age. Then, not yet fully conscious, but as if in a state of preparation for full consciousness, the peoples of Egypt were guided to revere what lives in the human power of raising oneself upright. The initiates of Egyptian culture made sure that the people learned to revere the power of becoming vertical by making them erect the pyramids, which rise up from the earth to the heavens. We must still admire today how, through the intervention of cosmic powers, this uprightness was brought to expression in the entire form and position of the pyramid structure. The obelisks were erected there, so that the human beings would begin to penetrate what the power of uprightness is. The wonderful hieroglyphs in the pyramids and on the obelisks, which were supposed to point to the Christ, awakened the spiritual powers from their Lemurian age. Although the Egyptians were able to arrive at a dim understanding of the power of uprightness, they were incapable in respect to the power of speech. Their mind had first to achieve the proper training in feeling, so that human beings in later times could understand the riddle of how Christ lives in the human gift for words. This riddle was to be taken up by the maturing human soul with the most devout awe. The Hierophants, the initiates of Egyptian culture, took care of this in a wonderful way by erecting the enigmatic Sphinx with its mute adamant form, which resonated under the influence of the cosmos mainly for the exaltation of the people of that time. In looking at the mute Sphinx, which began to resound from out of the cosmos through the rising sun under certain conditions and relationships, the deep reverence of the soul took form. Through this awe, the soul was prepared to understand the speech that must be spoken in the time when it was to be brought to higher consciousness. In what the Sphinx could not yet say, it laid the groundwork for what was to be said to humanity. The impulse of Christ lies in the forming of the movement of the Word. This was said to humanity in the words, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was a God. This was in the beginning with God. There it was, where everything came into being. And nothing came into being except through the Word. In the Word was life, and life was the light of human beings." End quote. Quote, "In the Word was life, and the life was the light of human beings." Quote, this word stands at the place where the gospel was born from the fourth post-Atlantean period, when, prepared by Greco-Roman culture, people had arrived at the point of recapitulating, in the fourth post-Atlantean cultural period, what had transpired in the Atlantean age. Just as the veneration of uprightness was recapitulated in the Egyptian age, so now the veneration of the Word was recapitulated. In this way, superhuman spiritual forces work their way into the development of humanity. The third thing the child must learn before really awakening to consciousness of the I is representation or thinking. Thinking, in this sense, was reserved for the humanity of the post-Atlantean age. Basically, it came, in fact, first for the people of the fourth post-Atlantean period. Before that time, human beings thought in images. I will speak of this in my forthcoming book, The Riddles of Philosophy. A child, in fact, thinks in images. Thinking thoughts was first given to humanity, was first awakened in the 6th and 7th centuries before Christ. Since then, thinking thoughts continued to develop ever further. We are standing now in the midst of this unfolding. Such thinking of thoughts evolves in such a way that it seizes our eye. The fourth Christ event, the mystery of Golgotha, took place so that such thinking may also be connected to the Christ impulse and not lapse into disorder in its effect on the eye. And if our thinking is to become increasingly ordered and continue to develop, so that thoughts do not become chaotic and confusing, but rather are permeated with inner feeling, so that a healthy truth thinking should continue to develop, this will all happen because thinking has been able to attain the impulse to do so through the mystery of Golgotha. Such thinking will take place because of the fourth Christ event, when the Christ impulse poured itself out into the spiritual atmosphere of the earth. The pouring forth of the Christ impulse happened for the first time in the Lemuria, when Lucifer threatened the upright nature of the human being. It happened a second time in the Atlantean age, when human beings were snatched away from the danger that threatened their speech through the fact that speech is expression from within outward. There was a danger of speech lapsing into disorder. Toward the end of the Atlantean age, a third intervention occurred through Christ's interpenetration of the being, who later became Jesus of Nazareth. Through this act, the gift of speech, insofar as it became a sign for external things, was saved from danger. The fourth danger concerned thinking, the inner representation of thoughts. Human beings are saved from this danger through penetrating with their thoughts such forms as that which has flowed out through the mystery of Golgotha into the spiritual sphere of the earth, and which can live within us if we are willing and have prepared ourselves through spiritual science. We are far enough along in the development of humanity that the first words of the Gospel of John may be expressed in another form. Quote, "In the beginning is the thought, and the thought is with God, and a divine thing is the thought. In it there is life. And life should become the light of my capital I, and may the divine thought shine in my eye, so that the darkness of my eye may grasp the divine thought." Unquote. Although it was not understood fully, such was the direction in the development of humanity. The fourth post-Atlantean culture began in the 8th century of the pre-Christian age. About 3.5 centuries later, thinking was sufficiently mature that it could be expressed by the Greek philosophers with the clarity that led to Platonic philosophy. Then human life was penetrated with the Christ impulse. The fifth post-Atlantean period began with the 15th century after Christ. The time from the beginning of the fourth post-Atlantean period to the understanding of thought is exactly as long as the time from the beginning of the fifth post-Atlantean period to a conscious expression of the nature of thinking, that is, until Hegel. Human thinking experienced its peak in Hegel with a statement, quote, "The life and activity of thinking in truth is spirit at work," unquote. What Hegel said in such an apparently incomprehensible way can be expressed with the words, quote, "In the beginning was the thought, and unending is the thought, and the life of thought is the light of the eye. May radiant thought fill the darkness of my eye, so that the darkness of my eye may comprehend it, the living thought, and live and weave in its divine beginning." End quote. The development of humanity proceeds in this way. Humanity has not come very far, precisely because Hegel has been maligned a great deal. One could truly say, quote, "And radiant thinking appeared in the darkness, but the darkness wanted no part of it," unquote. If we learn to understand our life, the life of thinking, then we will understand what will be incumbent upon humanity in its more distant existence. At the same time, because we work from the basis of spiritual science, there is still something more. Later epochs are always prepared in earlier epochs. While we are cultivating spiritual science in the midst of the fifth post-Atlantean period, and have more and more to contribute to the understanding of living thinking, thinking that is becoming clairvoyant, we have at the same time to prepare for the sixth post-Atlantean period. Life flows into thoughts through the Christ impulse. The Christ impulse will also flow into something that belongs to the capacities of the human soul and should not be confused with thinking alone. The child develops its capabilities out of the unconscious. In that it attains consciousness of the I, it enters the sphere where it can appropriate and must develop what, through the Christ impulse, can come in from without. As the child learns to walk and to speak, and begins to work its way through to the I by learning to think, we can gradually see how the conscious Christ impulse, which entered through the mystery of Golgotha, has its effect on children. There is something else that lies in the faculties of the soul into which humanity today cannot yet receive the Christ impulse. Leading this Christ impulse into upright walking, into speaking, and into thinking is possible through what has existed within human culture for centuries. If we base ourselves on spiritual science in the right way, we must think about bringing the Christ impulse into a fourth element, and about preparing this introduction into a fourth human faculty. We must bear this in mind. Where the Christ impulse cannot yet be led, but is being prepared to be led, is into human memory. For beyond walking and standing upright, speaking and thinking, the power of Christ is now entering memory. We can understand the Christ when he speaks to us through the Gospels. However, we human beings are being prepared for Christ to enter into thoughts, which then live on within us as remembered thoughts and representations. And the time will arrive for humanity in the sixth greater period of human development, but it is now being prepared, when people will look at what they have experienced, which lives in them as memory, and will see that Christ lives with them in the power of memory. Christ will be able to speak through every memory picture. Moreover, when we give new life to the representations that are so connected with us in our memory, Christ will be present in the memory. We will be able to look back at our lives and recognize that just as we remember, just as the power of remembrance lives in us, so also the Christ impulse, which has been poured into that power, lives in this remembrance. The way that has been ordered for human beings to make more and more true the words, quote, "Not I, but Christ in me," unquote, will be made smooth by the fact that the Christ impulse will gradually take up residence in the power of memory. The Christ impulse is not yet within memory. When the Christ impulse will not only live in the human intellect, but will also pour itself out over the whole tract of memories, then human beings will not be wholly dependent on external documents to learn history, for the power of recollection will expand. Christ will live in this memory. And because Christ will live in the human power of memory, human beings will know how he worked from beyond the earth up until the mystery of Golgotha, how he prepared and underwent this mystery of Golgotha, and how he continues to work further as an impulse in history. We will have this overview just as we have memory today. We will not be able to survey the earthly development of humanity without seeing the Christ impulse at its center. All power of recollection will be penetrated by the Christ impulse, and at the same time be strengthened through that penetration. For those of us who are to comprehend Christianity in a living way, also these words can be valid in the future. Quote, "In the beginning is memory, and memory lives on, and divine is memory. And memory is life. And this life is the eye of human beings, which flows in human beings themselves. Not they alone, but Christ in them, when they remember divine life. There, in their memory, is the Christ. And as radiant memory life, the Christ will shine in every immediately present darkness." we will be able to say, quote, Christ is in the inner life of our soul, unquote. Many of us will feel this because we will learn to connect ourselves with the Christ impulse through memory, just as we learned as children to straighten ourselves up, to speak, because we connected with the Christ impulse. Many of us also feel that because our current capacity of remembrance is in a preparatory state, it would, in the future, lapse into disorder if it did not have the will to let itself be penetrated with the Christ impulse. If materialism on earth were to deny the Christ, then memory would come into disorder. Then more and more people would appear whose memory would become chaotic, and who would become duller and duller in their dark eye consciousness, because memory did not shine into this dusky consciousness of the eye. Our powers of remembrance can only develop properly if the Christ impulse is viewed correctly. Then history will live like a living memory, so that the understanding for true events enters into memory. Then human memory will understand the midpoint of world events. Then vision will become valid for human beings. Common memory, which focuses only on one life, will extend itself over previous incarnations. Remembrance is now a process of preparation that will be completed through Christ. Whether we look outward at how we developed unconsciously as children, or whether we turn our gaze within, or through extensive deepening of our inner selves, look as far as what remains as our inner life in memory, we see the living power and activity of the Christ impulse everywhere. The new Christ event, which is now approaching, not physically but etherically, is connected with the first kindling of the ability to remember, with the first unfolding of the suffusion of memory with Christ. In this penetrating of memory, Christ will approach human beings as an angelic being. We must prepare ourselves for that. Hence, spiritual science should not enrich us merely with theories, but should pour into us something that makes us capable of receiving what confronts us in the world and what we ourselves are, with other feelings. Our life of feelings and sensations can be enriched if we penetrate with spiritual science in the right way into the essence of the Christ impulse and its workings in the human being and in the spiritual nature of the human being. It is good to often think the following, quote, In the beginning was the force of memory. The force of memory shall become divine, and a divine thing shall the force of memory become. Everything that arises in the eye shall become such that it is a creation from memory imbued with Christ, with the divine. In it there shall be life, and in it there shall be radiant light, which from thought that remembers shines into the darkness of the present. And may darkness, as it is at present, comprehend the light of memory become divine. Unquote. If we take in the sense of such words, then we receive something that is right for human beings to acquire. As the plant forms the seed for the life of the next plant, we learn not only to sense within ourselves the fruits that come to us from earlier incarnations, but also to sense so that we understand how to pass over into following incarnations. In following incarnations, our capabilities of memory would be in a very sorry state if we did not imbue ourselves with the Christ impulse. Thinking is still only minimally interpenetrated with the Christ impulse, and it is already approaching the memory. Let us learn from spiritual science to live not only for what is temporal in human beings, but for that which is eternal in human beings, for that which passes through repeated incarnations. And let us learn through spiritual science with the right understanding and the right feeling for the strongest impulse in the whole evolution of humanity. The Christ impulse can mean for the full realization of our own soul life. The end of Lecture 7.